This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by...
Daniel Wilcox.
And today we have one of my favourite people in general, but in the independent publishing world as well, Mr. Jay Thorne. How's it going, Jay?
What is up, Daniel and Luke? Great to be back with you guys.
Yeah, fantastic to have you.
Thanks.
So what has everyone been working on creatively? You've been writing stuff? Have we been making podcasts perhaps? What's going on?
Yes, all of the above. I got the Internaut podcast chugging along. Rachel Heron and I started one called The Pedal to the Metal in early January, and that's kind of crazy. It's about going from your day job to your dream job. And then I've been working on two writing projects, hardcore. Duskfall Book 3 with Glenn James, and then the first book of the trilogy I'm writing with Zach Bohannon. So I've been kind of cranking away on this.
Cool, man. It's exciting to see. I think I saw a sneak peek of the cover with Zach, maybe. It was a little bit ago now. Is that?
Yeah, he might be out there flashing it around, you know. He's that kind of guy.
Cover?
What's that?
I said, what about the cover?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. What about you, Dan? What have you been up to?
I have been just working hard on getting the beats ready for book two of Vey Rock, because the first book is officially released tomorrow, so midnight today. So yeah, just kind of cracking away and getting the gears rolling on the next book so we can keep pumping along and get more of that out.
Cool, man. And I think I've just been doing...
Everything.
No, I've been lots of admin stuff, lots of what do we call it again, Dan?
Manager time.
Lots of manager time. Lots of like preparing. I've been doing a lot of Kickstarter campaign stuff. So we're doing the El Marvo campaign. I wrote a song, like an El Marvo,
which was fantastic. That one kind of came out of the blue. So I just had a notification on Slack one evening going, "Hey guys, I had some time to kill, so I kind of just wrote a song about El Marvo." And I listened to it kind of expecting it to be, because I think I heard you do a ukulele song like for something a couple of months back. But this was full production value. What inspired that? Where did it come from?
I've always made little silly songs. That song took me about 20 minutes to produce. Like,
are you frigging kidding?
It's just a guitar, one vocal, and then a vocal harmony, and then some like
little
solo-y
bits. I feel like when this goes live, you should just be playing that in the background.
Okay, I'll do the instrumental. But Jay, you're a musician as well, right?
Mm. Yeah, I am.
I think there is something like, so growing up playing in bands and writing music and producing music and stuff, there's something in that's still in me now when it comes to making podcasts and books and stuff. Do you find the same sort of thing, Jay?
Oh, absolutely. There's a performance aspect. Mm. Even if you're sitting in front of a microphone recording a podcast by yourself, it's still a performance. Yeah. And there is something about, you know, in bands, Luke, I'm sure you recognize this too. You know, you can practice all the time. Yet when you get in front of a live audience and you're doing a performance, that's worth like 10 practices.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And so I think there's an element of that, especially in the multimedia stuff, where you know, if you approach it as a performance, it seems to hone your skills a whole lot faster.
Also, I remember getting incredibly, incredibly nervous like those first few gigs. But after like gig 100, it just becomes so, I don't know, it becomes kind of standard, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a different kind of nerves almost, because you have that initial, I guess, self-doubt where you're putting yourself forward and you're kind of wondering whether or not you are any good, if it's all in your head. But after you've had plenty of performances, because I used to do a lot of circuits of open mics in Lincoln.
Yeah, I've seen you do one. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a case of, like, I wouldn't have been that bold before. It took a fair few years to build up to just jumping up with a ukulele and just busting some stuff out. But yeah, the more practice you get, the more there is that tingling, that worry that maybe this performance isn't going to be the best, but you harden yourself to it. And I think it's the same with writing, the same with pretty much everything you do. It's growing confident in yourself to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Yep.
Cool. So we should probably jump onto the big whoops for the week. So Dan, have you got anything interesting you've seen, watched, smelt, tickled?
My big whoops kind of just... It's a bit self-indulgent again. It comes back to the book that's out tomorrow, but it's not strictly with the book. It's more just our advanced readers have been kind of awesome. Mm. So I kind of took a gamble on a couple of people who I hadn't really spoken to personally. And we mentioned one of them last year, the Instagrammer, Bookstagrammer, Jobbist89.
Yeah.
I've just made a few friendships by talking to people that I wouldn't otherwise have kind of reached out to. And it's been really, really humbling hearing the feedback that we've got from the book already. And we've already sort of got our first three reviews up online before the book's actually officially launched. So,
which is better than I've ever done before. So it's, we're doing not too bad there.
Yeah, so kind of bossing it. But no, there's just been lovely, lovely people. And I've actually been in contact with Zach Bohannon as well, who was going to get around to reading the ARC, but obviously he's a very, very busy man. So there's no sort of no hard feelings there, but... it's just nice to kind of chat to, I guess, other busy indies and see and know that you're kind of in the same situation as other people.
Yeah. I honestly, I have so much stuff to read. I have no problem with people saying they're too busy to read stuff. Like, it's my read pile is so big, and I keep adding stuff to it. I don't know why I do that.
You must get this a lot, Jake. You know, the king of collaborators. You must get a lot of people going, "Oh, I've just got this. Would you mind a little read?"
yes and no. It goes in waves. I definitely have They Rot on my pile, and I'm definitely going to read that. So that's one on there. And then the other problem I have is, you know, I'm a fan. I'm a reader too. Mm. So I saw on Facebook the other day the digital version of McCammon's Swan Song was on sale for like 73 cents or something. And I hadn't read that since I was a kid. It came out like 87. And so I grabbed it. I'm like, oh, great. I'm like creating more work for myself in a way, you know? So I agree. Like, and, you know, that's a big whoop for me. I'm like, hey, I love that novel and I'd like to read it again. But like you guys said, I got so many other things lined up that, I don't know when I'm going to get to it.
I've got to the point now where I've started to almost force myself to read the books that I just want to read for enjoyment, because I seem to get more out of those in terms of, inspiration and not advice, but I can pull a lot of lessons away. So I've been reading, as you know, Dan, I'm sort of falling more and more in love with Stephen King. Like, I don't know why I never read him as a kid. I know all my friends were reading him, and I just sort of kept, I think I'd seen too many of the bad adaptations, film adaptations or TV shows, and I just didn't really get around to it. So I've started to read, so I just finished The Drawing of the Free, which was amazing. Jay, you told me to get onto Dark Tower like so long ago as well. I'm just finally working through it, and I'm absolutely loving it. And now I'm reading Salem's Lot, and because I'm reading it just for enjoyment, I feel like I'm pulling so much out of it.
I've just started Salem's Lot as well, actually, and it's very interesting first few chapters.
Yeah, like the prologue very chapters or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting.
I'm a bit like, what the hell's going on? But
Yeah.
It's a really good study too. Like if, you know, as writers, you know, when Zach and I were still doing the Horror Writers podcast, or maybe it might've been with Richard. Yeah. We did the Pet Sematary issue. It's all kind of blends together now. And Pet Sematary is a great example of a book that I read as a kid for total enjoyment. And then when I reread it as an author, it was kind of stunning because like the writing itself was not very good. Like stylistically, it was not good. It didn't flow. It was clunky. There were awkward word choices, but it was still a book I couldn't put down. And I think that was a great lesson for me as a writer that, you know, the most well-written stuff isn't always the stuff that people connect with.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm.
Sometimes it's just the story behind it all that can pull you through. If your idea is strong enough, it doesn't really matter how you portray it. It's just people want to know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that would be my big work. But I do want to quickly say me and Ben have been recording a new podcast. All of us enjoy making podcasts far too much. But this podcast is all about, we call it Horror Hangout. And the idea is that we're going to watch the 50 best horror movies ever. And we're going to just record a podcast once a week, pretty chill. And we're just going to talk about the films and we're going to give them ratings and stuff like that. But it's been a great excuse to watch, sit down and focus and actually watch great horror films. So far we've watched The Devil's Backbone, which is the Guillermo del Toro one. And then we've watched Kill List, which is the Ben Wheatley film. And I'm so excited to just enjoy watching films again. So that'd be my big whip, I guess.
That's pretty awesome. That sounds like a blast.
Oh, yeah, man. If you want to get involved and get on an episode, let us know. I think the next on the list is The Evil Dead at number one, which I've not seen in so long. So I'm quite excited to see that.
Yeah, I definitely should take a look at that list. And I'm sure there's something on there I could contribute to.
Yeah, yeah. The top 10 is unbelievable. Like, I can't wait to get to the top 10. It's such a mishmash of '90s films. There's a couple from 2000s, but most of them are 70s, 80s. But it's such a good list.
Nice.
So this brings us on nicely. So podcasts. This will be our third podcast. We have The Other Stories. We have The Story Studio, which is what people are listening to right now. And we then we'll have The Horror Hangout. Oh, yeah. So Jay, you also have a lot of podcasts. Can you just quickly touch on that and tell us a bit about, you know, the podcast you're doing now, the podcast you used to do, and what is it about podcasting that you like?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the last question first. What I really like about podcasting is it's a great way for people to get to know, just to get to know you. I was going to say your voice, but I don't mean like the sound of your voice. I mean like your personality, and it's a very personal connection. And I've found that over time, people feel like they really know you when they listen to your podcast. And I know that's the same for me. When I listen to other people's podcasts, I feel like I know the person, and it's a really personal connection. And it's something that doesn't necessarily translate in a blog post. Like, that would be the written equivalent for me. A podcast would be a blog. And there are still some great blogs, and I used to blog a lot, but I found that the podcasts, with the rising ubiquity of personal devices like phones that people have with them all the time, it seems like a great way to take advantage of that real personal connection. So I think for me, that's why I enjoy doing it. And for my podcast, this is going to sound terrible. I don't put a ton of prep into them. And what I mean by that is I try not to be really scripted or overly outlined, because I feel like it takes away some of the natural synergy that occurs when you like step up to the mic and you're like, okay, I got to perform. And if it's all scripted out word for word, I feel like the listener can feel that.
I was listening to an interview with Larry King, and he was saying he never goes in with like a list of questions. We do, but just because we need to know what the hell we're doing.
It's better to have something, yeah.
Yeah, you guys have a format. So.
But he was saying that when he has questions, he feels like he has to follow the format, whereas he's not as actively involved in the conversation if he's got the questions there. So when they're not there, he's able to follow his curiosity and ask the questions that come to him there and then, which he thinks the audience will be asking in their home, wherever they're listening or watching.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, because I think too, even if it's not an interview format podcast, you know, there's a certain level of spontaneity that occurs, and I don't go in blind. So like when I prepare for the Internaut, and I'll answer your other question too about which podcast I'm doing. But when I do the Internaut, I work on it all week, but I'm thinking about stuff. I'm like, I'm reading a few articles, I'm researching a few things, and I sort of have an intention. I sort of have a place I want to go, but I don't script it out. And I can't really describe that line. And I think it's something that you get better at the more that you do. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes you miss the mark. I've done episodes where I was done and I was like, that kind of didn't quite go where I wanted it to go. But you kind of learn as you go. And I think that's what's great too, is like, you're only as good or as bad as your last episode.
Mm. Yeah. Out of curiosity, what podcasts do you listen to? Is there any that you find really inspiring?
Yeah, I mean, I have some staples, and I need to pull up my player here to make sure I get them right. So, like, I've been listening to The Creative Pen for years, and you know, I'm good friends with Joanna. I've been listening to Simon's Rocking Self Publishing podcast, the SPP guys, the Sell More Book Show. I've been listening to the Book Launch Show, which is a new one by Tim Grawl, who also does the Story Grid podcast. Rachel Herron's How Do You Write? Those are a lot of the writing ones, but I also listen to some other ones like Introvert Extrovert. I listen to the General Rebel podcast, James Altucher show.
Yeah, I love James Altucher.
I listen to Lewis Howes In and Out. I feel like he's got a lot of athletes, and that's great, but like, I feel like the athletes kind of are speaking to a different audience, so I kind of come in and out of that.
Yeah.
And Mark Dawson, Self-Publishing Formula podcast. I listened to that one. So, Mega Maker, he's on hiatus now, but, Justin Jackson.
But I've got a Mega Maker t-shirt. I'm a big Justin Jackson fan as well.
Yeah. Me too. So those are the ones that are sort of in my player, and I'm always like sampling and listening to other podcasts. And it's just like being a writer. I think you have to read a lot to be a good writer, and I think to be a good podcaster, you have to listen to a lot.
Sure. Yeah. So the podcast you've got currently running. So there was the Horror Writers podcast, which is now on hiatus. Is that right? Or
yes. And Zach is always threatening to bring it back. So, that was my first foray into podcasting. And I can barely even listen to episode one of that podcast because I hear how I've grown since that. And that wasn't that long ago. That was like maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago at the most. And that's where I started. And that was really just a podcast about being a horror writer. I started it by myself, and then Richard Brown joined me for a while, and then we ran out of stuff to say. And then Zach Bohannon's like, hey, we should do that again. And then Zach and I did it, and then we ran out of things to say. So it's kind of sitting there. All the back episodes are there. We may or may not pick it back up again, but we kind of felt like we just didn't want to do it for the sake of doing it. Like, if we couldn't say anything meaningful, then we were like, it's better off not doing anything.
Yeah.
For sure. So that was my first podcast. And then around the same time, I was working on Dark Arts Theater, and Dark Arts Theater was going to be a podcast, a video podcast for people who love both heavy metal and horror. And I know that's a sweet spot, and I know that there are a lot of people that have those converging interests. But for some reason, like, I feel like it just kind of missed the mark. I did 2 full seasons. I mean, I had some killer interviews on those 2 seasons. Like, I had Ed Sanchez on from the Blair Witch Project. I had a great guest. I did a lot of high-end production. Like, it took me 20, 30 hours per episode because I was doing audio and video, and I was doing remote shoots. And I thought for sure, like, oh, that's really going to hit the mark. And it, numbers-wise, it kind of fell flat. And I did 2 full seasons because I didn't want to give up after 1 season. I wanted to see what would happen with a second. But it's so time-intensive that unless I feel like a resurgence in interest, I'm not sure if I'm going to do another season of that.
Yeah, for sure. It's our 3 podcasts, one of them is super time intensive, but we've sort of built like a team now. So we've got like an audio producer. Mm-hmm. There's the 4 writers. There's the 7 narrators now. Dan, is that right?
Oh, around that. We get into, I think it must be about 7 now.
Cool. And then like this show, for example, doesn't take too long to do. I don't edit it too much because I don't want it to become a chore. Like,
right.
I just want to enjoy talking to, you know, my favorite publishers, and I just want to enjoy talking about one of my favorite subjects. I don't want it to become another job. We're already writing. We've already got full-time jobs. We're already trying to write and publish like however many words a month or whatever. It's difficult.
That's one of the things we alluded to in a previous episode as well, was the fact that, I mean, it must be similarly to the Horror Writers podcast when you mentioned that, you know, the reality is there are other things to be working on, and sometimes some things do drain time that isn't necessarily working in your favor in the long run, especially when you have longer term goals. And we've recently stretched this from weekly to fortnightly, just because we love talking to each other about the different topics. We love meeting guests such as yourself and having some awesome people on board. And it's one of those things that we want to keep rolling, but like you say, you don't want it to be a chore. So it's kind of trying to find that balance sometimes.
Yeah, I agree, Daniel. That's hard. And, you know, the most recent podcast I launched with Rachel Herron really kind of came out of a tweet. Like, she had me on her podcast and she made a joke and said, like, hey, we're like the petal and the metal. Like, I'm the flower and you're the metal dude. And I tweeted back as like, hey, that's the name of our new podcast. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And as we talked about it, like, she left her full-time job in middle of last year and I'm transitioning out of mine in like the summer of this year. And she's like, let's just talk about that. And we have like, there's no intro music. There's no call to action at the end. Like, we spend 20 minutes talking. I spend 10 minutes saving the file and uploading the Libsyn and we're done.
Yeah.
And it's just and like you said, like, that's not a chore. Like, I look forward to that. It's just like I'm talking to a friend and then we're done. Yeah. And the intronaut is a little more work because I will bring in, sometimes I'll play a guitar riff or I'll bring in some audio from some other source and I may have to mix a little bit, but it still doesn't feel like a chore. Like, I can knock that out in a few hours.
Yeah.
But when you get into, like, you know, scheduling interviews every week, and if you're doing the video, like if you're doing, you know, a hangout that you're going to post on YouTube and audio, like, Zach and I were doing a lot of post-production, mostly Zach. and we were like, damn, this is just a real time suck. And we don't know if we can afford this kind of time to dedicate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was listening to your Petal to the Metal this morning, because I was listening to The Creative Pen and she mentions it in her latest episode. And obviously with you coming on tonight, I was like, that's what a prime chance to listen to some more content. And I have to say, like, from the bottom of my heart, it's one of the most genuine listening experiences that I've had in a while, because you get a lot of, there's a lot of stuff out there for indie publishing, for people who want to basically do this and discuss what's kind of going on in the world of indie publishing, writing, podcasting. And to have a 20-minute soundbite, which is just a genuine conversation. Like you say, there's no intro music, which is refreshing. There's no CTA. It's just like, if anyone wants to be a fly in an author's conversation, that's kind of your opportunity to do it. And I'm halfway through episode two, but I have to say it's generally one of the better podcasts that I've listened to in a while.
Wow, thanks, man. The truth is, and I don't know if I've mentioned this publicly before, but Rachel and I kind of were going to go with a different format and it was going to be more writerly. And at one and like, we kept struggling to like record the first episode. And finally she emailed me and she's like, dude, seriously, I'm just not feeling this. Like, it just doesn't feel right to me. And I think that's why, like, we're not getting anywhere. And she said, let's just talk. Like, let's just talk about where you are leaving your job and where I was leaving my job. And we're not going to make any grand plans about how long it's going to go on or how many episodes we're going to do or what our SEO is going to be. Let's just talk. And she said, I think there's probably a lot of other people who are in the same situation. And I was like, right on, let's do it. Yeah. So, you know, there was no grand plan. And yet at the same time, it was like we both came to this realization that the indie publishing world is well covered by many podcasts. So let's do something a little different.
Yeah.
Even the name itself, I mean, was it a conscious choice to go for something that wasn't, like you say, it's not SEO, it's not optimized for people to grab it. If you were to search for writers or self-publishing or anything along those lines on the podcast apps, you're not really going to find Petal to the Metal. Was that a conscious decision?
I think it wasn't. I'm being totally serious in that, like, you can probably find that tweet on my feed. Like, it was a total just riff. It was a total joke. It was a play on words. And the other reason I think we really liked it is that for that exact reason, it didn't define the show. It defined our personalities. And we thought, if anyone's going to listen these days, you know, blogging is the newest, or podcasting is the new blogging, right? Everyone's throwing up a podcast. And so we thought, you know, if the only differentiator is going to be our is going to be us, and so we might as well put ourselves out there, be vulnerable, be transparent, and if people like it, they'll like it, and if they don't, they don't, and we'll happily quit and go do something else.
Yeah, I think so. When a lot of people start podcasting.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
They have this idea that they're going to do 300 episodes, or they're going to make a show that's just going to like be ongoing until they retire.
Bring but in the money.
I kind of feel like it doesn't have to be like that. It can be way more open. Like you can just stop a show whenever you want to. Like no one's shaming you into like doing the episodes over and over again. Like you could do what you want in this world.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's pressure as creators we put on ourselves, that whatever we're doing has to last forever, and it's not going to. And I do think that's okay. There is this weird place, and I don't know where the line is, but there's this weird place between sort of getting people engaged in something and then abandoning it versus like letting it run its course.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but I know that like there are some podcasts I've listened to and like 4 or 5 episodes in, I'm really digging it, and it just disappears. And that feels weird to me. Whereas a podcast that kind of runs its course and just hangs it up, I'm like, all right with that.
Yeah.
I think sometimes as well, I've listened to a few podcasts, and I won't say any names, but I've listened to a few where I've got hooked on them for a core premise, and then as time goes on, as the show gets bigger, as monetization plays its course and things change, it does change its approach. And even though it's the same group of people, there's always kind of like slight U-turns that people take without realizing. It's just a natural course of how it goes, and they find a new audience, and you find that sometimes you weigh yourself out of what you're originally listening to.
Yeah, good point.
So something I did want to touch upon was how important collaboration is for you, Jay. I mean, like if we turn back the time like 2 years, I wasn't much of a collaborator at all, but now I'm sort of co-writing books with Dan, I'm co-writing comic books with Ben, with like co-writing all the podcasts, working with loads of different people. It's been revelatory for me. What are you collaborating on right now other than Pedal to the Metal?
Wow.
small question.
You know, it's been really weird for me because I did not set out to become the collaborator, and that's kind of the reputation I have. And I think I've come to grips with that.
We do think of you as the collaboration king.
Yeah, like I that would not have been something I would have been proud of even like 6 or 7 years ago. I was, and I still consider myself to be the lone wolf. I love the idea of locking myself in a cave and being creative, and I don't see a downside to that. I know that, you know, some people do, but I think what I've discovered is collaboration is another way to create art. And oftentimes, if you hit the right person at the right time, the work is far better than either of you could have produced on your own. Right now I have the American Demon Hunter series going, and the way that works is I wrote the full novel, which created the world and the characters and the situations. And then I've been inviting people to write novellas in this world. And it's sort of like a television series that's nonlinear. So if you think of the X-Files, every episode sort of stood on its own, you know, similar characters, but like a different threat. But there wasn't sort of a series resolution at the end of any episode. And that's kind of what American Demon Hunters is now. I'm inviting people, they're writing a novella in the world and where the main characters have to solve the problem, and then it's over and readers can go on to something else. That's an interesting collaboration because I'm basically working as the developmental editor in those relationships. I'm having people write drafts, and then I'm doing all of the editing and all of the cover work and all of the sort of the behind the scenes stuff. And then
Jay. So just on the American Demon Hunter series, so those ones where you're acting as editor, where other people have written the novellas, are you co-writing those? Like, are they titled, is it credited as co-written, or is that like written by Zach and produced by you, or how is that working?
The way it's set up is it's the author is featured and it says with Jay Thorne. And okay. And basically the process, it's not anything new or top secret, but the process is that I have an episode format that I want the people to follow. And so they'll create an outline so that there's some consistency between the novellas. Not necessarily in word count, but sort of in the story structure. Because I think any good TV show has a format that it follows. So I give the format to the writer. They bang out just a rough first draft, and then they throw it to me, and then I do all the revisions and rewriting after that. So it's, you know, it's a different, I don't know if it's technically co-writing or not, or if it's collaboration, but because they're writing the first draft portion of it, I give them sort of top billing on the story.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have seen a series, and I'm looking to dive in at some point. There's like 5 books at the minute. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, there's the full novel, and then there's 5 novellas, and there's 1 in production right now.
Cool.
I read the one with Zach.
Oh, cool.
I was very interested in catching up with some of Zach's work and your work as well, and just wanted to dive into. Very, very good. I think I left a review on it on Amazon as well for you.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah.
But that's an interest. Before you actually started sort of, I guess, dipping into these projects and collaborating in that style, had you ever had any editing experience beforehand? I mean, or were you ever, I guess what I'm saying, yeah, did you ever edit beforehand, or was this a new experience for you?
No, this was a new experience. And when I decided, I didn't decide to do this whole thing until I finished writing the novel, and I was going to start writing book 2. And I'm like, you know what? I want to try something different. I like to push myself. I like to have new challenges. And I thought to myself, you know, I've been watching what Johnny and Sean and Sean and Dave were doing with Sterling and Stone. And I was like, I kind of want to do my own flavor of that. And I definitely saw myself more as Sean than Johnny. And I thought, you know, this would be a good opportunity for me to try my hand at sort of some developmental editing. I mean, it's not true developmental editing because it's my world that I've created, and I'm sort of approving like story beats. Yeah. But it was a challenge for me, and I can't, like, it wasn't perfect. And I'm sure if you talk to some of the novella authors, they'll tell you that there were some moments where they, you know, we pushed back and forth on each other. And I learned a lot about developmental editing just from doing it. Mm-hmm. So, that was not something I had experience with, but it was something that I wanted to kind of push into.
Yeah. It's almost like you're, not show running, but maybe more like directing or producing the TV show or the film series.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analogy.
The Kevin Feige of the American Demon-Hunted world.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fair analogy.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and you also co-wrote Risen Gods with Joanna.
Yes.
That was a different process. That was more of a I guess you call it a classical co-writing process, if there is a classical version of it.
Yeah, the Risen Gods with Joanna and the Duskfall series with Glenn are both written in the same format, or the same process, I should say, which is we're bouncing chapters back and forth. So we're Joanna and I both first drafted. We had story beats. I think she kind of came up with story beats that kept us 5 or 6 chapters ahead. We'd each write our piece. We each did revision passes on it. And then the same thing with Glenn. So Glenn kind of comes up with the story beats for Duskfall. We each write chapters. And then we each do revisions on it. So I guess in that sense, it's more of a classical, like, back and forth co-writing. Yeah.
And do you enjoy it?
Oh, I love it. I love the different flavors of collaboration. So, like, it's different with Zach. Like, Zach wrote for the trilogy we're working on, he wrote the whole first draft. Like, I came up with maybe a 1,500 or 2,000 word list of story beats. He then he wrote the first draft, and he, in his words, he said he gave me slop. So I told him, I'm like, just get the, because he hates revising and I love it. So I said, just get the words on paper and I will totally take it from there. So that's a whole different way of co-writing. But that's a situation where Zach and I know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and we're using those to our advantage, because the revisions is the most fun for me, and for him it's the first draft.
Is that your favorite part of the book production process, the revision? Or is there another part?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's and I would even go so far as to say it's probably the second or third revision what I really enjoy, because by that time I've gotten through the mechanics, I've gotten through the main story structure, and it's where I'm really putting a polish on it.
Yeah.
I think we're a bit similar in that regard, because me and Luke, our collaboration process tends to be a bit more like yours and Zach's, although we're kind of trialing both at the minute. So I've written the first draft of one, which Luke has edited, and then vice versa. But I definitely feel like I much more enjoy having part of the clay molded and then making the final touches, as opposed to slopping it all down and handing it over.
I enjoy doing the first drafts and doing more of the peppering of the poetry, you know, editing style bit at the end. But that bit where you've got the first drafts and you've got to like make it work, it just tires me out.
It's a puzzle. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's not even a question of what's easier. Like, some people say, like, oh, well, it's easier to revise because you already have a draft, and some people say, well, you know, it's not because it's a different kind of brain activity. It's a different process for revising, and I don't think it's easier or harder. I think it's just what you find to be your sweet spot. That's what makes it better or worse. Not you know, whether it's easier or harder.
Yeah, and I will say, so Dan, this book we've just done in this series is the best sort of writing that I've ever been involved in. So I do think the collaboration process is a case of 1 + 1 equals, you know, 3 or 5 or whatever.
Yes.
I feel like as well I've just learned, or I picked up lots of good habits through looking at the way you've edited my work. I can see more of what I'm doing. It gives me a clearer picture of what I'm doing, so I can see what I'm doing that's just not good. and I can sort of, it's just made me look at the way I write prose in a lot more detail, which is it's just a great learning experience. So I'd recommend anyone to try it.
I think there's nothing like receiving edits back from someone who you are working closely with, who you have shared the same idea, and seeing, even though you've both agreed on your route, that there are still differences in opinions in certain parts and how people manage that. I mean, Jay, you must have so much experience based on the different people you have collaborated with. Do you find that each partnership lends a different lesson?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's my intention. You know, I had mentioned earlier, I kind of wanted to do my version of collaboration. And I was watching what the SPP guys were doing. And Zach and I are going to do, you know, Molten Universe Media together. And we're going to seed that company with our own collaborative works. At the same time, I feel like there's so much value in collaborating with different people at different times. And I could go down the list. I mean, the Black Fang Betrayal, I worked with 9 other authors. And that was such, that was so enlightening to see how these masters, these guys I looked up to, what they did. And I kind of got their inner workings. And that was fantastic. And then, like, Joanna is a master of, like, scheduling and time management and staying on task and moving the story forward. And I learned so much from her. And Glenn is amazing because he keeps this entire fictional world in his head, and he's got like multiple fictional worlds in his head. And like, I'll write something and he'll be like, yeah, that's not going to work because back in chapter 4 of book 2, that guy did this. And I'm like, holy hell. Like, you know, so like it's every time you work with somebody else, you know, for me anyways, I learn something. And I think that's, you know, it's part of a selfish, self-serving reason to collaborate is like, I want to get better, and there's no way of getting better. Like, you can't not get better when you're working that closely with someone else.
Yeah, for sure. So we are steamrolling through the time. We've been at it for 40 minutes already. one of the things I really did want to ask you about, Jay, is how you stay on top of it all. I know I have been better this year, but there are moments last year when I was like pulling what little hair, you know, I had out. I mean, have you got any techniques in like the way you schedule, the way you set goals and that sort of thing?
I do. I have some like high level strategies, and then I have some like low level tactics. So, you know, the low level tactic stuff is I use a Google Calendar and I try and do a zero inbox. So whenever something hits my inbox, I either try to deal with that task immediately, and if I can't, I move it to my calendar. And it doesn't mean that things don't fall through the cracks, but it feels like something I can manage. And that's sort of a low level tactic. High level strategy, and I know this is a bit controversial, and if Brian Cohen from Sell More Book Show is listening to this, he's going to cringe, but I'm not a big goal setter guy. And I know that seems kind of counterintuitive, but I feel like goals can be restrictive. And when you're hyper focused on goals, you're missing opportunities. And some of the greatest stuff that I've done has come out of opportunities that I just made a right turn and chased it.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have occurred. Like, I would have said no to it if I would have been strictly focused on goals. So I, you know, there's a balance there. I think you have to set intentions, but I don't think they have to be as specific as goals.
You sound kind of similar to the way I'm trying to do it. So to have compass points, I call them, which are like the long term, just to direct what the short term goals should be pointing towards. But I know that like James Altucher says not to have goals because they can be kind of crushing when you don't succeed.
Yeah.
But okay, Dan. We're cracking on with this interview so quickly. I didn't realize we'd gone this quick. Jay, we have got, I didn't tell you about this either. We have got a quick fire round. So in the back of your mind, start to prepare yourself for that. but before we get into that, Molten Universe is something that I'm extremely excited about. I don't really know what it is,
yes,
but it's exciting anyway. Can you tell us anything about it, like what the plan is, what you guys want to do there?
Yeah, definitely. It is going to be a publishing company of sorts, but at first it's going to be co-written books. Zach and I, this year, phase one, we want to get as much good stories and novels out there, and so we're going to try and write a bunch of trilogies. So we're gonna start with books. We're starting with sort of post-apocalyptic dystopian genre. And phase two, though, is we're going to look to bring in other writers. We're going to look to spread out to different mediums like graphic novels, comic books, music. We're both metalheads, so we want to bring in some musical elements to it. So I think to lay the groundwork, though, we want to have a nice back catalog of co-written stuff. So that's kind of the plan.
Cool.
That's fantastic.
So the first books, is these the post-apocalyptic ones that I might have seen a cover of?
Yeah, I think it's the Final Awakening trilogy is what it's called, and book one is going to be called Dawn. So that may have been the cover you've seen.
Cool. And how can people stay in touch with Molten Universe and you know, keep their eyes peeled for what's going to come out of there?
Yeah, we have a landing page up for the website. I think it's moltenmediauniverse.com. I should probably double check that.
we'll put it in the show notes. So
yeah, if you put it in the show notes, it works. There's a just drop in your email, and then as things develop, we will definitely be in touch.
Cool. As I mean, like I said, I'm really excited. I think because I really admire you and Zach as sort of separate creatives.
You admire Zach? Are you going to say that on air?
I'll edit it out. Don't worry. but I'm just so excited to see what you guys are going to do together. So I'm on that list. I can't wait to see what you guys do.
I'm on that list as well. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so the quickfire round. We've got 8 questions. You've got about 5 seconds to answer the questions. Are you ready?
I'm sweating, but yeah, I think I'm ready.
Okay, Dan, do you want to go first?
Okay, are you ready?
No. Go for it.
Stephen King or Dean Koontz?
Stephen King.
Sugar, spice, everything nice, or Chemical X?
Chemical X.
What is your spirit animal?
Wolf.
The last podcast you listened to?
Sell More Book Show.
The last book you read?
I'm gonna say American Demon Hunters because I was reading a novella of my own work.
Cool. The last human you petted?
My wife. I better answer that way.
Harry Potter flying on a tiger made of chutney or Larry David riding on a motorcycle possessed with the living spirit of Daniel Radcliffe?
Oh, definitely Larry David.
Favorite book?
Dark Tower. If I can cheat and do series, I'd probably say Dark Tower.
Yeah,
nice. Before we kind of wrap up as well, I did have one extra question for you, which is kind of more on the author mindset, because it was one of the things I heard you talking about in the first episode of Pedal to the Metal.
Yes. And
how I just found it very interesting that you were talking about how you compare yourself to the other writers around you and how you suffer from imposter syndrome. And I did wonder whether or not that was something that potentially you had a conversation with Joanna Penn about, as she speaks quite a lot about it in her latest book, The Successful Author Mindset, and whether that's something that, I don't know, because I found it quite bizarre listening to that, because I mean, I'm familiar with your work and I see the things you're doing, and then I'm sat there about to release a book tomorrow suffering from the same thing. So I guess what I'm asking is, what's your kind of advice on that, and how do you approach it?
I think my advice is, if you feel it, it's natural and it's okay. And as long as it doesn't stop you from moving forward, then it's okay.
Cool.
Beautiful.
So I do have one more question as well. So I remember,
this isn't the quick round anymore, is it?
No, we're out of that now. Yeah, you completed the challenge. You passed the test. Don't worry.
You get a certificate in the mail.
Yeah. So I remember emailing you about 18 months ago, I'm going to imagine. And you asked me, like, what is one piece of work that best represents me? And I think I sent Keith the short film I made at the time. Mm. And I'd like to put that question back to you. What piece of work have you made that you think best represents you and you're most proud of?
I'm so glad you asked me this now, because I got almost a very similar question is coming up on the next Pedal to the Metal episode. So it's great. I've already answered this.
Cool.
I've done so much collaboration that I'm proud of. But if you're asking like what best represents me and my voice, I would have to take all the collaborations off the table, because by their nature, they're not just my voice. So it would be a disservice to those people I worked with to kind of claim those as mine. So I think because of that, I think it would be Reversion, The Inevitable Horror, Book One, A Portal Arcane. It's not my best writing. I wrote it probably 5 or 6 years ago. I wrote it before I really understood story structure. So it's a high concept story about redemption in a parallel universe, but I wrote it from the seat of my pants, and I'm proud of it. I like it. I think it's a good story, but it's not my best writing. I've written and published hundreds of thousands of words since then. But that being said, I feel like it's my, like, if people want to figure out who I am and what I am, that's a great place to start. And it also happens to be free on all platforms. So there's that.
And it's a great book. I've read it. It's a really Thank good you. Book. Yeah. So where can people follow you and your work?
Easiest thing to do is go to jthorn.net, and then you can get everything from there.
Great. Okay, so I'll link to everything in the show notes so people can find all that there. I just want to say a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, the patrons for subscribing on Patreon. Thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, and thanks again to JThorn.
Thank Dan, you, guys. Thank I you really appreciate it.
No worries,
thank
man. You. Dan, where do you want to send people to this week?
www.hawkandcleaver.com/bunker, where you can throw yourself into the bunker and protect yourself from the inevitable post-apocalyptic rage of the rotters.
Yeah, and there's a free short story at some point.
Yes.
You'll find out. Okay. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.